Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep for Tuesday, January 24th. I'm Spencer Israel, as always, joined by Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. Want to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Chaikin Analytics. With their groundbreaking stock research tools, including the proven Chaikin Power Gauge Rating and Stock Discovery Engine, Chaikin Analytics simplifies complex investment decisions, and it's all presented in an easy-to-understand platform that's up on the screen right now. To learn more, visit chaikinanalytics.com/premarket. That's Chaikin, C-H-A-I-K-I-N, analytics.com/premarket. You can see it up on my screen. I have a chart of J&J because that is one of the many stocks to report earnings. We're going to cover them. We're also going to cover DD, KMB, Lockheed Martin, Alibaba, Verizon, and more. We're going to try to cover as much as we can before our guest at 8:35. That's, of course, Nick Shaheen. He joins us every Tuesday to talk about what options trades he is making. So, Joel, we've got a lot to get to this morning. Where should we start?
Well, let's just get it over with. Let's go with Yahoo, Baba, Baba.
Are you echoing?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, so you want to start with Yahoo or do you want to start? I want to start with dry ships.
Okay, let's go with the dry ship rant.
The stock that does a reverse split every other week, reverse splits on Monday, 1 for 8, and the stock, you know, it's closed at $1.01 Friday. Obviously, the adjusted close would be up $8.08, and then it just falls 30% again yesterday. The stock reverse splits. And then it just tanks. And then it reverse splits again. And then it tanks. And then it reverse splits again. Until you get some, you know, something just funny happens, and then you get a short squeeze, and then it rallies all the way up. This is ridiculous, really. I mean, how many times has this reverse split? And what is the new all-time high? I gotta know what the all-time high on this thing is now.
Are you sitting down? The new, or the former, all-time high in dry ships is $1,500,000.
What? No, stop. $1 million a share.
Yeah, we don't even have $1,000 stock here. We got $100,000. We got $1,516,947 and for you, 0.80. Now, if you're trading in sub decimals, it might be 0.80012 or something. But that's, you know, I just don't, Dennis, I posed this question before the show started. This company's gone from making, they peaked at making $600 million at one point in 2012. Then you're going to, last quarter, they made $12 million. Why do they allow this stock to trade?
Well, are they still making money? They must have lost money. Their revenue was $12
million. Yes, correct.
There's no way they're making money, $12 million. But, I mean, usually the rules are if you trade under a dollar for 30 days, they delist you. At least that's what it is on the NYSE. I'm not sure what it is on the NASDAQ. I'd have to look it up. But, I mean, I guess they're getting around the rules. They keep reverse splitting the stock so it can keep listing. So if you keep reverse splitting it, it's never trading under a buck for more than 30 days. It goes under a buck, we'll just reverse split it again. And eventually, there's going to be like, no shares outstanding or one share outstanding. They reverse split this so many times. I don't even know if the chat knows how many shares are outstanding of dry ships now. Like, my system shows 34 million, but I think it's probably less than that because I don't know if that's adjusted for the recent 1 for 8 reverse split. So if anybody knows what the outstanding shares of dry ships are, the current outstanding shares are, because we can't even keep up with all these reverse splits. And the $1.5 million a share is just funny that that's the all-time high because it's reverse split so many times.
Now, they did it 3 times last year, and then they did it once again this year. So that's like 4 times within the last year. Dennis, is that, can you get
that? Yes, that's a trend.
Yes.
The trend is your friend.
Can you borrow the stock? Is it easy?
Let me try. I'll try right now. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Dry ships. Nope. I got to go find a locate. I could probably find a locate broker, but that takes a little bit of time. I'm not going to do it live on a show. So sometimes you can borrow it, sometimes you can't. Right now, in my system, I cannot easily borrow it, so I've got to go find a locate somewhere. And as you continue to reverse split, it becomes more hard to borrow. And then, obviously, as it's harder to borrow, it has more potential for a short squeeze. And that's what we saw back in November when the thing went from, well, back then it went from $5 to $100. Now it's showing $800 because of the reverse split on the chart, but just ridiculous. Fuzzy's saying it's going to zero eventually. I don't know if it is. They're just going to keep reverse splitting it. Maybe it can never go to zero if they keep reverse splitting.
Okay, before we move into all these earnings, Dennis, Bob Wire at 754 popped in the chat, and he wanted you to explain you don't mention shorting stocks at 52-week highs or all-time highs. Which one are you talking about, or is there a particular stock you're referring to?
Okay, let me just – so I'll read the question here because Joel's kind of tried to put in his own words, but I'm just going to read the question straight out because Bob was pretty clear. Yesterday you mentioned, this is to me, that you don't short stocks at 52-week highs or all-time highs. Can you explain your thinking on this? Why do I not like to short stocks at all-time highs? The reason, you know, just in general – that I don't like to short stocks at all-time highs is because there's nothing above there. So, you know, first of all, I don't have a reference point to be shorting anything because it's clear skies ahead. It's never been up here before. Even 52-week highs hasn't been up there for a long before. Second, you're definitely fighting the momentum. When a stock makes a new all-time high, you're fighting the momentum for sure because, you know, it's been going up. Because that's why it's making new all-time highs. So, you know, as a day trader, as a short-term trader, I like to be more with the momentum as opposed to against it. You know, investing is a different thing, but I don't invest on the short side. I'm not, you know, going into companies and I'm not, you know, this long-term like Ackman style and saying this company is going to zero. You know, I don't do that kind of fundamental analysis. I do swing trade shorts. I don't do investing shorts. So that's why typically I don't short stocks at all-time highs. Now, you know, if it was to make a high, sell off and then come back to retest on high, that is different. But then when they're making and breaking out to new all-time highs, there's just nothing above there. It's clear skies ahead, kind of, and that's why it's scary to be short because I don't have an out. I don't have a reference point to say where my out is. And I never enter trade if I don't have a contingency plan. Hard to have a contingency plan on where I'm going to cover this thing if it's making new all-time highs.
And one other note of that, if a stock makes an all-time high, let's say intraday, and goes up another buck or so, then it comes back down through that level, you know, there you do have a reference point because you have a new all-time high. So, and there you're going with momentum. But
I basically want the reference point. And Ethan G. asking another question, he says, isn't that what contrarian traders do? You know, and I think so. There's a lot of contrarian trades. But what I'll tell you is this, you know, style of market, you know, especially from the last 7 years, it's been, you know, a little, I don't know if it's just the style, you know, and everybody's just trading it that way. But I find momentum trading is a lot easier from a day trading perspective than it is to do contrarian trading. And I was and Joel, both of us, were the biggest contrarian traders back in 99, 2000, 2001, probably all the way to 2006, 2007. I was a classic contrarian trader. I was fighting the trend all the time, you know, saying it's going to reverse, mean reversion, doing all that type of contrarian strategies. And I have just found and adjusted. And that's what I always say. You have to adjust to your trading environment. And what I've found from my own trading, and, you know, if you're still contrarian, if you're doing well, continue to do it. But in my own trading, I have found over the last 4 or 5 years that I've had more difficulty going against the trend. And that's why I go with it. And I think, you know, it's kind of self-fulfilling. As, you know, it starts to work, then other traders start to work it. And it's just a difficult market to fight the tape in. And, you know, there's markets that it's easier to fight the tape. Sometimes you get these oscillating markets that are going nowhere. Kind of, you know, a year and a half ago, we were kind of had that market where, you know, the S&Ps were just kind of hanging out. You're going up, you're going down. But we were really going nowhere. But there were still individual stock moves that were very trendy. Stocks that were going in one direction or another. So there's a time and a place to be a contrarian for sure in the overall market. I've just found over the last 4 or 5 years that I've had an easier time with momentum trading.
All right, Dan. We got a lot of earnings. I think we got a request for Verizon here, who's getting the beats.
Oh, there is a lot of stocks that are actually getting the beats here this morning and some major components. Let's go to Verizon. Spencer, give us the results here, and then we'll talk about the technicals on VZebra.
Yeah, Verizon reported Q4 EPS 86 cents versus an 89 cent estimate, so a little bit of a miss there. Revenue 32.3 billion versus 32.08 billion, so a slight beat there. They do see fiscal year 17 adjusted EPS trends to be similar to the consolidated revenue trends, and it's fairly consistent with 2016 numbers.
They're hitting it pretty hard here this morning. It's down 2.5% here, trading down $1.50 through $51. 50 is a huge psychological level for this thing. And you got to think, you know, still 4.52% dividend. Value investors lick their chops when the Verizon pulls back a couple of bucks. So I wouldn't be surprised if this thing did get down. If it gets down to the 50 area, I might even try for a bounce trade of 50. Now, we're trading 50.85, which are 85 cents above it. So I don't know if we're going to get all the way down there or not. It's already down a buck and a half. But, it, you know, we always try to set up scenario analysis. If it was to get down to 50, I think that's a level that I might be comfortable trying to actually be a contrarian on this trade and buying it for a bounce.
I'll just give you a level on the upside that we haven't hit yet, a potential support, 50.44. That was your December 7th low, and then 50, a psychological number. I'd be more comfortable to tell you that, you know, in the next 2 days, 3 days, week or so, if this thing gets anywhere near back $52, that's going to be some major resistance. So those are, I can't really pick a bottom in it yet because it's still just going down. We haven't sent anything. And Verizon will let you know if it's going to turn. It will give you a couple lows in the same area. And as of right now, it continues to make new lows on the session.
Yeah, great point. You know, we're breaking down through that 52 support. That was the low we got to about a week and a half ago, and we kind of have multiple lows just in the 52.15 area. Now that we break down and flush through that, we often say old support becomes new resistance. So if for whatever reason, you know, I gave you a scenario analysis on the downside, Joel's giving it on the upside. If for whatever reason it was to come back up to that 52 area, it probably finds some sellers. People who were trying to pick the bottom before probably, you know, saying, okay, thank you, you know, I'm out. I held it through the report. I shouldn't have did this, and I'm out. So there's, you know, when we're sitting at 51, we're kind of in the middle of those two levels. So I sit on my hands at 51. I may be active 50. I may be, you know, active 52, but I'm sitting on my hands at 51.
All right. Let's go where we want to go.
Actually, can I bring up Sprint real fast? I was looking at this morning.
What's going on with Sprint? Because this was trading up last night in the after hours.
I was looking
everywhere for news, and I wasn't finding anything. I know they did the whole Jay-Z thing yesterday, but is that really what's trying to drive it up here again this morning?
No, I don't know. Well, yesterday there was the deal where they bought Tidal, but I was more so, which is the music service which created by Jay-Z and a bunch of other artists. I'm more interested in it because it's been about a year now since the Can You Hear Me Now guy debuted on Sprint for Sprint commercials. Remember, he used to be Verizon, now he's in Sprint. I was looking at a Sprint chart for the last year. Can You Hear Me Now guy is good for business, it seems like. If you look at
I know you have Rogers over there, your only carrier. Do you know what we're talking
pretty
about?
Pretty much. I actually don't know that.
Oh, I apologize. So there was this commercial that aired seven years, 2002-ish to like late 2000s for Verizon. The guy would walk around saying, "Can you hear me now?" And then there'd be a pause, and then he would say, "Good." And then the whole thing was obviously Verizon has great service and great coverage. He recently switched to Sprint last year, and it was kind of like a funny thing because he hadn't really been in the public eye in a while, and then all of a sudden the former Verizon guy is now at Sprint, saying the exact same thing pretty much, and that was last year. So looking at a 1 year chart of Sprint, and can you hear me now, guy? Can you hear me now, guy? Go, he's good.
So you follow the Can You Hear Me Now guy to make money, basically. He's your tell for which stock to buy. Is that what you're telling me? So when he switches to AT&T, we got to go buy AT&T?
Yep, that's what I'm saying.
All right, now I'll just give you a very light print up here at 944, trading at 935. Not sure if it's well bid or well
not
offer
really,
there. Nothing going on, Dennis?
It was well bid last night. It was trading actively in the 930s, which makes me think it wants to go to the 930s. Like I said, I'm not sure why. I think it's just continuing momentum here because the stock has been hot. Like Spencer was saying, it's a breakout over 9. I think anybody who's short is probably scrambling around right now. The book's littered with offers, though. I mean, 910 I see through 33,000 shares. I see 19,920. But I mean, it's 20,000 shares on a stock that trades, you know, 50 million shares or whatever it trades a day. So, you know, I don't know, you know, how much that's going to hold it down, but there's a lot of offers in the book, so it is pretty thick.
If you want to get a juicy level on the upside ahead of double digits, back in the middle of 2014, you had three highs right in the 970 area. So 35 cents away in this kind of market, who knows, it may be able to get there.
Jumping over to the other earnings reports here, Johnson & Johnson, let's go to this one here. J&J is trading down in the pre-market. This is breaking down now. You have multiple lows right around the 114 area, call it 113.5, and now we get the breakdown, the flush on a disappointing. I think it's the guidance that's hitting it, but Spencer, give us the details.
J&J, who was at the White House yesterday to meet with Trump, they reported Q4 EPS of $1.58 versus $1.56, revenue of $18.1 billion versus $18.3, so a bit of a miss there. Their fiscal year EPS guidance for the year was $6.93 to $7.08. The estimate was $7.11, so they are coming in lower than the estimate there, and that is looks to be what's hurting the stock.
Again, value investors look at stuff like this and they start to lick their chops. You know, that's why I don't think you're going to see this huge flush on it today. But, you know, I could see over time, like 110, you know, that's where we bought them before. I could see a retest of that eventually. So I don't know if I'm jumping in here with two hands and buying it at 112. Down at 110, it gets more interesting there. Dividend is 2.85%. You start getting that dividend up over 3%, and that's where the value investors start to get hungry.
Pre-market low is 111.13. You got a nice bounce ahead of that or after that. Hold, kind of just holding in 112. So I'll kind of tend to believe that that pre-market low might hold up for a while. Looking on the daily charts, if you want to look for resistance, former low of the move was 113.37. That could be your resistance. That was actually your January low, but stock out of favor, sector out of favor, not a big surprise here looking at the downside.
Tons of stocks in the chat. We'll get to them in just a second. We just got to cover the other major earnings reports here. We got to go to Alibaba because this one has been wild. Reported at 6:30 this morning. It got the pop, then it got the drop, and then it got the pop. So all over the place, Alibaba. Yahoo obviously following suit. I know Yahoo reported last night, but we know Yahoo is more just an Alibaba tracking stock, so it's just kind of chasing the price of Alibaba around. So let's go and get the report there from Spencer on Alibaba.
Q3 EPS $1.30 versus $1.13. Revenue is $7.67 versus $7.33 billion.
That's a big beat on the top. It's a big beat on the bottom. Like I said, it did get the initial pop, and then it got the drop, and then obviously it got the pop there again. So just chopping around. You see that on the earnings reports every once in a while. But you know, I kept thinking it's going to get to $100. Here we are. We're 102, so we're coming back. And you know, I started thinking about 105. That was the major resistance point back in October. That's maybe the next level of resistance. But these things can be funny. And just to update you, Dry Ships is now down another 7%.
And I have a new trading strategy, Dennis, and I'm surprised you haven't brought this up yet. You're winner chicken dinner on this one.
Why is that?
We had a little lunch wager on.
Did we?
Yeah.
What did I say? I'm glad. I would have never even thought. Look how honest Joel is. Joel being honest here. I would have thought you would have just let that one slide. What was the bet? I don't even remember it. I must have said $100 and you gave you 90 or something.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I liked it. I liked it down there at 95 when it broke out. And I wish I would have bought some, actually. I didn't buy it. But I get the lunch, and that's more important.
And I was just going to say, yeah, you know, it's much cheaper for me to buy you lunch than it is for me to buy a whole bunch of puts. So I'm kind of glad about that one. Your pre-market highs, 103.80, seem to be backing off that level now. So I think, for me, anything back in that 103 handle could be potential resistance. Haven't been in triple digits since November. So if you're really going to get cranking, you're going to get above that pre-market high. Just be aware that your November high was 104.10.
Okay, let's jump back to the chat. We've got other earnings, Lockheed Martin. We'll come back to these. GLW 3M reported here this morning, 180, huge number in 3M. But let's jump over to the chat because chat's asking about a lot of different stocks here. Actually, let's go to Dr. J because he's asking about DuPont there. And DuPont is an earnings stock, so we'll just throw that one in there. Double D did report here this morning. Actually, the report's not bad, but it got the pop, and now it's actually getting a little bit of a drop here too. Spencer, what did Double D have to say?
51 cents versus 42 cents. Revenue 5.2 versus 5.3 billion.
So slight miss on the revenue here. Did they say anything about the guidance?
I'm not seeing it yet, but I will keep looking. I'm sure it's out there.
That's yeah. Okay, so he'll go dig up the guidance there. We're hanging out here. I mean, we got a little bit of a pop. I'm actually hedged. I'm long DD, short Dow, which I trade those two stocks against each other because of the takeover. So I'm basically net neutral DuPont here right now with the short on the Dow. But looking here at DD, it got up to 73.40 or 73.99 just with an odd lot, actually 73.40, and then it's traded all the way down to 72.25, hanging out right in the middle here. So they beat on the bottom line. They miss on the top line. They haven't really decided if they like it or not, just kind of hanging out. Very light volume, only 3,200 shares have traded.
All right, you want your guidance. They see
yes.
Q1 EPS plus 8% year-over-year to $1.36. That may not compare to the $1.41 estimate, though. So, but
okay.
Plus 8% year-over-year is the important number.
Just hanging out here.
Yeah,
Joel, give us a number here.
72. I just got that on my mind here. Yesterday's low was in that area, 72.23, and then I saw 72.02 back in early December. So, you know, it looks good. If you're looking at the chart, it's been holding that support level. So if it holds 72, I think it's good to go to the upside. After that, you could see 71 in a hurry. And isn't, like, I mean, we could talk about the earnings with DuPont and Dow, but isn't like the whole merger thing, isn't that kind of like the primary thing?
And I think they said, I did see some
this quarter. This quarter is what they see for that.
But we haven't got approval here on this yet.
Correct, that's what I meant.
But they see that happening this quarter.
So, and down, and this is trading like it's going to get approved. I mean, you bring up the chart of DD and DOW. DOW is just tracking DD very, very closely in price there. So you can see if your charts look identical to each other, if you put them on top of each other. So, you know, that's why, and I do, I pair trade some of these things, you know, against each other. It's just risk arbitrage, all this is. So, and I've done that for my whole 18-year career. I've done a little bit of risk arbitrage. And sometimes there's an opportunity, you know, when a stock has an earnings report and the one, you know, takes off, sometimes, you know, you get an opportunity, you know, to pick up the other one that might lag by a few seconds or even a few minutes sometimes. So, you know, but when they say comments on the merger, that makes you think, you know, well, Dow could, you know, tight, that spread might tighten a little bit, you know, if they really think that this deal is going to get done. So you have to watch that when you trade risk arbitrage too. But DuPont just hanging out here flat. They can't decide if they like the report here or not. Lots of other symbols flying us out at the chat here. Bob Wire was saying about Bristol Myers. We haven't talked about it today. Last couple days here, put lows in the same area. It's funny how these stocks get murdered, but they get murdered right back down in the same area that they got murdered from before. Back in October, we had 1, 2, 3 lows in Bristol Myers, right around 49.03. We took those out. We went down at 48.92 2 days ago, and then the low yesterday, 49.15. But it's just buyers. It's buyers down there in the 49 area. You know, whether it's value investors with a 3.11% dividend or, you know, people bringing in shorts, I don't know. But all I can tell you is it bottomed a lot of times in October there, and it, you know, it's bottoming a lot of times here in the 49, or a couple times here recently in the 49 area as well.
And just kind of what you were talking about before, having a reference point when you're taking a position in something. You did have an excellent reference point here in Bristol Myers. It kind of got hit on like the same news twice, and we've seen we've seen this happen before. Good support. Now you're starting to move up here. Trading at 50.17. Let's call 50.50 a good number on the upside. Two highs at 50.31 and 50.69. After that, you got a big, big gap to fill.
Jumping over here, WDC, Larry wanted it. It was earlier this morning. He wanted our comments here. And Western Digital, Joel, this has been one of your best holds ever. It's trading up $1.25 now in the pre-market here. What is the news on Western Digital? I didn't hunt this one down, Spencer. Do you see the news on WDC?
I just see that they named a new CTO, Chief Technology Officer.
Okay. In any regard,
and that was yesterday, stock, so I don't even nothing.
Stock's trading up here again, WDC. It's been a monster. Joel, you still long?
I'm still long. I wish you guys keep mentioning it. Cause
you're like a hero on this stock.
No, because, I mean, it's in my never-sell portfolio, and now you guys are,
have you ever sold anything in your never-sell portfolio?
Nope.
You never? Really?
Yeah.
No, really?
Yeah.
You've never sold anything in your never-sell portfolio.
Why? I mean,
what is in your never-sell portfolio? I got to know.
I can't reveal all that.
Give us one other stock in your never-sell portfolio.
Twitter.
You got Twitter. That one's a ugly one.
And then
WDC's made up for those losses, Joel. You've been all over this one. You bought this thing right near the bottoms. This thing's a double for you now. Give us your technical thoughts because you're the WDC master.
Okay, yeah, 74.15. That is your pre-market high, trading at the highs of the session. That's taking out the former high of the move at 73.47. If it gets to 86.39, that was your high in October of 2015. I may let it go, but right now, you know, it's just breaking out. Keep an eye on that former high of the move at 73.69.
Spinner talking about Apple. This is the big downgrade here of the day. The stock is coming back here, though. We've got Barclays downgrading the stock and lowering the price target down to 117 here. So not too bearish. I think equal weight they're going down to here. Stock closed at 120.08. It was trading down around 119 most of the pre-market, but it's bouncing back here now, 119.5. And, you know, Apple's had a lot of closes, you know, right around this 120 area. Again, we've talked about this. You know, we did get a close above it, but this 120 is still, it seems to be like a magnet for this. And sometimes Apple does trade, you know, on those big strikes at the nickels, saying, you know, 110, 115, 120. It hangs out at those levels for a while sometimes before it breaks out. I sometimes think that has to do with weekly options and open interest, because people buying the 120 calls or the 120 puts, you know, get, you know, into the money or out of the money when it moves away from it. And sometimes, you know, it can get brought back in just by the natural action from, you know, people selling the stock against their calls or buying the stock against their puts.
Oh, boy, you had 4 days of tight ranges, a little over a buck and a half here. Did have a spike down in the pre-market in Apple under 119. 118.91, that's your pre-market high. Let's look at keep an eye on that 120 level again. I mean, you've had some highs above it, some highs below it. High close in the move is the number that I'm looking for Apple to improve on, and that's 120.08, and it did that in yesterday's session. And just, Dennis, guess who we're going to have on to cover Apple earnings a week from tomorrow?
You got Gene?
You got Gene. We got Gene.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep, and he's now of Loop Ventures, and I'll tell you, this guy is looking, he's not looking a year or 2 or 5 years down the line. He's looking at 10, 15, 20 years down the line. Spencer did a 45-minute session with him. He's working on an article, and man, this guy is, you know, 20 years ago, if we would have listened to him on Apple, you know, would have had a nice investment. But
he's been all over Apple. I mean, he is the, you know, the Apple man. He was pumping Apple 10 years ago. You know, yeah. When the stock, you know, go back 10 years ago. What was the price of Apple 10 years ago, Joel?
Oh, boy. Let's go to
Let's go find out when Gene started liking Apple.
10 years ago in 07? Oh, my Lord. $20? $25?
No, less. I think it was less than that, no? Because it was in 2010, it was $20.
Let me see here. Let me go to my monthly chart, and I got to go a little bit farther out. Yeah, maybe you're right. Let's go. If you go with the middle, yeah, you're right. 1280. It closed in April of 2007 at
14,000%.
Yeah, 26.
The last 10 years. You know, you can be bearish Apple, and you can say a lot of different things. The stock's up 1,000% in the last 10 years, basically. That's what you're telling me.
So for your shorting new all-time highs there, I guess.
It's had a lot of hate in those 10 years. Like, I've seen a lot of hate articles. I think I've even, you know, been on the hate side a couple times. I know you were a couple times, too, short-term, you know, just on the pullbacks there. But it's been incredible. I mean, they changed, you know, everything. You know, the iPhone changed the world, basically. You know, people went from, you know, obviously doing a lot of things. And now everybody's on their phones. So Apple is an innovator. I still think they're cooking some other stuff up, no pun intended. And that's why I'm still long Apple in my long-term portfolio. It's been a good one.
And you know what? I remember the first phone Lisa and I had. It was, you couldn't even take it out of the car. It was like, we had to get it installed in the car.
The classic Zach Morris car phone.
Yeah, exactly. let's see here. Stock Hunter's calling us out for our Qualcomm calls yesterday, and I noticed that one immediately. We were dead wrong on that one.
Well, we weren't dead. I thought it would bounce to 55. So what I said was, I think 60 is too early, and there's a lot of air below, which was, I was scared. It filled that air immediately all the way down through 55. But not only, I thought it would bounce at 55. It did not. It went all the way down to 53.77, so went another buck and a half lower, and then bounced, and then closed around 55. So I still say, you know, I'd use yesterday's low as a reference point here, but man, they killed it. And that's the power of Apple. I mean, here you've got, you know, a lawsuit happening, and, you know, from Apple, and boom, they murder the stock. Apple is powerful.
Yeah. All right. 53.77. So here we go, talking about reference points here. Stock Hunter, if you're going to try and buy it today, keep an eye on that low, 53.77, up trading at 55.20. The close at 54.88. So see if we can put a bottom, a double bottom in there, something to lean on, see if we could get. I mean, it's just a lawsuit. It hasn't anything been determined yet, but that's what I said yesterday, and they took it out to the wood shop.
They are still flying with symbols in the chat here. Tesla, Bob Wire wants to know about stock. We haven't talked about for a few days here. 250 was my number. It's still hanging out here around 250. Did get above it yesterday there, 250, but I'm going to just stick with the 250 number here. I think this is a number where I keep saying, I thought 240 it might stop at, so I always go to the next whole number, next big whole number, 250. I mean, you start going 252, 253, then you start thinking about 260, but this trend has been your friend. And we were talking about contrarian, you know, trading contrarian investing, you know, just this morning right off the top of the show. And man, and it's, I've been saying how this is a momentum market, and once the ball gets going in one direction, it can continue for a while. If you've been going with this trend in Tesla, you've been making some money here in the last month and a half. 180 straight up to 250 of draw. Perfect purple crayon line,
that's
as Jeff Mack used to say.
Yeah,
that purple crayon, you take that and you draw that line, you go with it, and it works. The purple crayon, you know, technique, which was, you know, I always liked Jeff Mackey. I wish they wouldn't have got him off Fast Money, you know. There are lots of good people there on Fast Money, but Jeff Mackey was always my favorite. And when he left, I stopped watching it as much. But anyways, he had the purple crayon technique, and it still works today here in Tesla. Jeff, if you're listening, we're giving you a shout-out here.
Perfect. I mean, that's what you could do if you're not trying to pick a top or 250 or 260 or whatever. To me, that trend line, we're not, if we can see it, we're not the only one seeing it. That comes in under 240 here, so keep an eye on that. I guess it's also the, you know, the way your charts are lined up too, as well. There was also a mention here in the chat about some of these fertilizer stocks, and I know I'm going to throw Spencer and Dennis under the bus here, but who do we have on a week or so ago that was talking about Mosaic and Potash? Do you remember? Can you remember who that was?
Oh, boy.
It was Chris Temple.
Was it Chris Kimball?
Chris Kimball.
Was it Kimball?
I can't remember, but he really liked
it. I think it might have been, and he liked them. He has a great call on these things. These things have analyst ratings all over them today. Spencer, do you have those analyst ratings there? I think it was Cowen. Cowen upgrading AGU. They're upgrading Mosaic. They downgraded one of them in there, but they were upgrading a bunch of them.
Rob Hood with the save. It was JC. It was JC.
Oh, JC Peratt's like, JC, man, he gets the calls too. But he's a momentum trader too. So, you know, you can see how many people are momentum traders out there. And, you know, it's like I said, it's almost self-fulfilling. When that many people trade momentum, they identify these trends early, and then they're going with them. So it's hard to fight because there's just so many momentum traders out there.
I was going to ask him if it was okay because it was under the 200-day moving average, but I didn't want him to get mad at me.
And Cowen did upgrade Mosaic to market perform and AG Agrium to outperform.
I think there was CF. There was a couple other ones in there, too. So they had, you know, analyst action. Cowen was all over these today. So there's multiple upgrades. And there was a downgrade in the sector, too. I can't remember which one. But CF, you can see, is trading up about 50 cents here in the pre-market. That's a continued momentum there from yesterday. Mosaic breaking out. Mosaic, the big number for me would be 32. I got to go to the book. Going to the book here right now to see if there's something in the book at $32. No, you know what? There's not much there, which is actually a little bit surprising. But Mosaic here, I still think 32 is a big number for it.
Let's take a look. The last 2 months, we had a new monthly high yesterday. Took out the 31.54, went to 31.78, trading up here at $32. You know me, I don't want to chase it, but if it came back anywhere near that close, 31.55, 31.60, that would be an area of support for me. So here we are already at 8:34. Let's just take a quick break. We're going to grab Nick Shaheen. Create income with option spreads is his product. We'll be right back with Nick.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Chaikin Analytics. I'm your co-host, Joel Alkanen, along with Dennis Dick, Spencer Israel behind the glass, and we have Nick Shaheen on the line. He's the author of Create Income with Option Spreads. Nick, how you doing on this Tuesday morning?
Doing great. How about you guys?
Good, good. So I'm going to go right to a trade setup here, and I'm going to write down exactly what you're going to tell me to do, and I'm going to do it. Okay?
Okay.
10 of the last 13 closes have been between 22.61.50 and 22.66.50 in the S&P 500 futures, okay? I don't want to make a prediction on which way it's going, but I can almost guarantee that in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, we're going to be either substantially above this or substantially below it. How do I play it?
The easier bet is to the upside when the Bulls are in control, and they're definitely in control. And I was going to tell you, I was going to talk about the small caps, but this translates into here because markets will trade together. First of all, this is the ES based on my opinion, and this might help you make your decision. So I'm going to start with the small caps and answer your question there.
Sure.
The small caps are at a place where they need to bounce. And they look like the open interest is set up for a bounce, meaning the upside is the easier path. So I expect a bounce in the small caps, which should take the rest of the markets with it. So if you want to bet which way, I'd bet upside. How do I do it? You can do it two ways. You can buy a debit call spread in any of the indices or ETFs you like. And you can there, you have a decision between buying it at the money or near the money or way higher for a complete lottery ticket. So the upside of the way higher is it's cheaper. So lower out-of-pocket risk. However, you need a bigger move in order to profit more. Whereas if you buy it at the money or near the money, then you immediately double your money. If the markets start rallying, you don't need a bigger move. So you only have to guess the direction and not the magnitude.
Okay. All right. And that's being on the buy side of the options as opposed, you know, to the sell side. So that makes perfect sense here. Earnings season, just your quick assessment here so far. I know you like to look at the fundamentals.
Earnings have been, the catalyst for particular stocks, but there was no big whoosh to take anything up or down as far as markets. So I'm concentrating on what the mega techs are going to do with their earnings, meaning the big guys are lined up. And I'm long. You can be long them as a blanket by doing the Qs or the NASDAQ. Or you can be long each of them separately. And I have a few longs in Google. I had Facebook, but I booked it because it came up too fast. I have Amazon as well. And I did trade Tesla on the upside, believe it or not, against my own beliefs. But so there are a lot of opportunities. So pick your stories and you can do exactly what I just said. So risk a little bit to double your money if you want on a lottery ticket for the earnings. But know that the reaction on the earnings, the short-term reaction, is a complete coin flip regardless of the numbers themselves, because you don't know what the market is going to do with that information. We've seen a lot of earnings that blew numbers out of the water, yet, you know, the reaction was negative. So
yeah,
there is that gambling aspect.
That's a great point you're making. You know, at sell race, you know, you can say, oh, this is a great report, you know, in the stock I'm going to buy here right now because it looks great. And then it goes down and you're like, what's going on here? But, you know, there's a lot of other factors involved. What has the stock been doing? You know, what sentiment towards the stock? Are they all expecting it to blow it away? Were they expecting them to miss, you know, when they came in line? Then it's actually good news that they're in line. There's so many, you know, factors to consider other than just the flat out numbers.
Yep. And also, I just posted a FANG opportunity. The last time I was on, we talked about the FANG, that I was watching the FANGs as a collective. And here they are. You know, we have at the forefront of something, right? So they could do it via the earnings. We've seen Google and Facebook move, 15% at one point in one time. I'm not saying that that's going to happen here, but it could happen. And these guys have good stories to sell. I mean, one has 1 billion users, the other one has 1 billion clicks, and I don't know the exact numbers, but seems like a zillion. And, you know, I'm not so sure about the Apple. I know you guys talked about $20 versus now, but I don't think it's going to be up 1,000% 10 years from now unless they change the head.
It's too big. The company's too big now.
It's not that. They haven't shown us anything exciting. I mean, here they are picking a fight with their biggest provider or one of their biggest provider, unless they're planning on dumping it, Qualcomm. So I think you guys talked about that. And I was like, okay, so why would you pick a fight on somebody that supplies you with stuff? So yeah. I'm not sure what the logic is there. So there are more exciting stories out there. Now, don't get me wrong. If Apple gets sold, I will buy it, but I'm not going to chase it higher. I would chase it higher via the Qs. I don't trust it.
I love the FANG, how you put it together on that chart. It makes it look like here, man, we're right at all-time highs around the FANG, you know, coupling the Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google here. And you can see Google actually making new highs yesterday. Facebook, you know, kind of having a strong
day. But it doesn't make headlines, right? It makes new highs, but it's not making headlines. There's a company that's very exciting to watch. It's got cash cows, and they have venues and other stuff, and they're kind of controlling their spending with regards to the crazy ideas. And some of them may may pan out. Maybe one of them will pan out. They don't need many to pan out. So there are ways of doing it. Actually, you know, talk about chasing the markets higher. If you're also brave at selling spreads, you could buy the debit call spread and sell a credit put spread and then make it a free ride higher if it happens. However, you do open risk to the downside. But every dip has been bought. So unless the markets see a scary new headline, nothing they've seen, because all the headlines they've seen, they've sold and bought and sold and bought. So the reaction will be not that great. But new headlines that are scary, the dips are going to be bought. And if that's the case, then credit put spread will pay.
Spinner from the chat here, he wants to know about Intel. This is in consolidation station here right now. Last month and a half, just hanging out, just under 37 bucks, multiple highs. Did break out yesterday, sniffed a little bit higher, and then peeled back again here. Give us your technical thoughts on INTC.
Well, Intel in the long, long term has an interesting formation, but it never lived up to it, like a giant cup and handle inside of another giant cup and handle. So you have to go to the monthly chart to show it. It did pop up on one of my screens as a potential coil. So it could have a move coming direction, is not clear yet. So it's on my watch list. And I don't know the fundamentals of it yet. So I'm trying to read up on it before I decide on it. But technically, it's sort of interesting, but it's too slow of a pattern to go all in right now. So I guess if I do follow the stock and I believe it and I don't mind owning it, kind of like the Twitter thing you guys keep trying, I would sell puts in it and buy calls. So if it does get hammered, then I bought it at a discount. And if it doesn't, then I'm long it for free.
Give us your thoughts on Twitter. I think Twitter is in trouble. I'm going to keep saying it. I'm the Twitter bear. I got bullish there for a little while there, and I got the timing right, but I've been bearish for a while. I'm going to stay bearish Twitter. I don't know, Nick, if they're going to figure this out. And the second thing is the stock chart does not look pretty, and I don't think anybody's buying it either. That's why I'm staying bearish Twitter.
You know, if the president uses you and your word, your company name comes up a 1,000 times a day and your stock can't rally,
yeah,
I don't know. So the government should buy it and build an
I'll tell you right now, with Trump in there, he's not buying Twitter. He's cutting expenses. He's not paying $12 billion for a social media stock.
Somebody's asking why spreads versus diagonals, Brad. I think it's my personal preference. Diagonals work fine. If you don't know what those are, they basically, you're working with time. So you buy one longer dated and you sell a shorter dated in order to subsidize your entry.
Here's a stock we haven't talked about in a long time. Nick K, the Battle Creek, Michigan company, Kellogg. Just hanging out near the lows of the move here. This is basically the daily chart. Not exactly a high flyer, Nick, but give me your thoughts on Kellogg.
I don't know the fundamentals, but it seems like a staple company. So I would imagine the dips would be bought. If you look at a five-year chart on Kellogg, so weekly candles, I'll throw the one in there for you. And if you believe in the fundamentals not deteriorating so terribly, it could be an entry point coming up if you think it's going to just simply, and I'm quoting here, revert to the mean. That would be go fill up that red zone towards the middle part. So if you look at it, that's a five-year chart, and it somewhat behaves that way. There's nothing pressing. Earnings are probably coming up in a few days. So like I said, earnings are usually some sort of a gamble. So if you believe in the company, I would sell puts in it, only if I'm willing and able to buy the stock. So if the $68 put give me any premium, I would probably sell it. And if I really want to be long it, I'd buy calls with that money. However, if it does get hammered, I will get assigned that stock at my sold put. And anything lower than that, minus the premium I paid, would be losses.
Okay, looking at AKS Spinner, this stock has been had a monster run there when Trump got in, went from $5 to $11, put in a dozen highs above 11, and now obviously has failed and started coming down here. What is your outlook here for AK Steel?
Wow. Well, you guys summed it perfectly. Here's the other side of that reverting to the mean part. So here's AK Steel and reverted.
Wait, why do you have all these charts in your back pocket? You've already posted a chart. Are you that fast at getting these up, or you just have these already?
I got a team.
I think you do. Like, they're that 10, was like 10 seconds. Fingers. He's already drawn a chart on it.
I was born with an extra finger. So I got 11. No, I'm just kidding.
11 fingers. Extra fingers.
No, this is a decent advantage. I got a decent platform, and it's pretty good, so it helps me out. So anyway, this is a reverting to the mean chart, so I have no reason to catch it here. Plus, I don't. The commodity it's in, I mean the business it's in, I don't know about it, so I don't know what the price driver was. Was that a Trump trade because they're going to build so many things? Are they still a pure steel company, and how that plays with the dollar and the Chinese steel that's come out? So I really don't know enough about it, but technically I have no reason to buy it here.
All right. Also out of the chat here, let's see how long it takes Nick to bring up a chart of Visa. Oh, maybe he's cheating. Maybe he's looking in the chat here. How about Visa and MasterCard? I guess you could do one or the other.
Or both. Okay.
So
or both.
You said Visa first, so okay. I'll throw Visa. again,
10 Visa. Seconds. He's got the chart drawn.
Well, this one.
And posted.
This one runs. And so here's, it's at a point where you can go along it if you want to, but you've had higher lows knocking on a roof, even on a long-term chart. So if it, that's a tight situation, and it's pretty exciting. In fact, on the one-year chart, it's even more exciting. So technically, I would venture long it just based on the technicals alone, and especially if there's a trigger. So that's a one-year chart right there. And if it beats the recent high of, like, say, if it gets to 82.50 plus, then it gets really interesting for the momentum buyers. You guys talked about momentum. That was one of my things. Fewer contrarians, more momentum trades. And kind of like yesterday, I saw a little tickle in the TLT, the bonds, and I wrote it higher and I bailed out of it at the end of or middle of the morning. So momentum trades are definitely easier to do, especially in this market, because the downside is somewhat limited on everything. Everything's getting bought.
I want to see your long-term chart on MasterCard too, because I've had this. This is one of the longest things I've had in my portfolio. I think I bought it back in like, oh, it's like a year or two before or after. I think I like 2005. I've had this in there for like 10 years. I've had this one, and it's been one of my best stocks. I think my average cost base is $12 or something. So, you know, now it's 109. So there's your long-term investing. You know, sometimes you get one right. If you hold on to them, they can really work out. But let me know what you think long-term here, MasterCard.
Well, I like it. It seems to have fewer pitfalls than Visa for some reason. By that I mean like negative headline. So, and it's in a breakout on the long term, and it does have room to go higher on a long term on a weekly basis if you eliminate the noise. So a nice trend. If I'm long it, I usually don't, I wouldn't book it, or I book part of it, or I book and re-engage with house money somewhere.
I've booked some gains on this a few times, and it just keeps building my portfolio because it keeps going up. I wish I would have never sold any of it.
So I guess you need to start a never sell portfolio, which
that's what I need with Joel, a never sell portfolio. I don't have one of those.
I can't do one of those.
I can't do it.
I can't imagine a company I never want to sell. I mean, that's just investing with emotions. Not to say anything bad about you, Joel, but it's not for me.
That's all right. I'll just get out from under my desk here and ask you about Workday, and I'm going to give, let's count 1,001.
What's the ticker on Workday?
WDAY. We'll give you a few seconds here for it to pull up.
Okay, reverting to the mean thing is right in the middle on the long chart and on the short term, I guess, because it's fairly new. This is a push-pull area. This is from where they fell and they got back to it. Is there memory there? Are there people trapped there that want to get out or not? They filled the gap on the way from the one that brought them down here. So from here, they need another oomph higher. So if I wanted to go along it, I'll wait a couple of ticks and see what happens, even at the risk of missing out a headline.
Here's one I want to talk about. Ace's been talking about this in the chat today. It's trading up substantially in the premier GoPro. Finally, you know, you're seeing a little bit of a short squeeze here today. I'm not sure what the headline here was. It's up 5%, but I know the short interest. I'm just going to go grab it on this thing. I think the short interest is quite high. Yeah, short interest is 32% on this thing. So, you know, eventually it's probably going to see a little bit of a squeeze. Maybe that's going to start today.
You know, this is like Twitter, right? They had all the makeup of being successful. I mean, they're like the camera to have for a point in time. They were talking about the being the YouTube killer at $90. And from here, they just need a miracle headline or something. Management did try to execute, but they seem to have faltered a few times. I thought the drone thing was kind of exciting, but that fizzled too, because there are like a million other drones on the market. A friend of mine is into drones, and he's got three or four or five of them, none of which have GoPro anywhere on them. So they have other cameras on there, but they're not GoPro cameras. So I'm not sure where they're going. They need to surprise us with a headline. They could. I'm not sure. So this will be on faith. So kind of like Twitter. If you think it has a bottom of source, then you sell puts in it if it's really. But it's cheap enough to buy the company itself and sleep on it. If you want to do that,
but, can't lose more than $10. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Final. Just want to ask you about the financials here. Man, you've had stocks like Bank America just not giving in here, forming all kinds of support. I don't know if you want to look at the XLF here, expectations for interest rates. Quick, if you want to pick an individual stock, or if
Here's the XLF. The XLF is a good blanket. They've been trading in unison. I did pick on Citigroup, and I said Citigroup 56. I said I flipped a coin and came up 56 or something like that. Here it is under 55. So unfortunately, I didn't ride it as well as I could have. I made some money, but it was very minimal, not worth the hassle. I did try to pick on the banks a few times and lost. So I won't argue with them, because they physically could make more money just based on interest rate, but I don't think as much as we gave them credit for. Plus, people are saying, they're not even near where they were before, but there's no reason they get back to where before. I don't know, the fundamentals are the same. I mean, there are so many other things that have happened since then with regards to their stock prices. So I don't think it's a one-to-one relationship there. So regardless, the XLF needs a bounce here, or probably get to 2250. It does have support in the open interest, so I'm not calling it a forecast, but this is a must bounce area. It's a wishy-washy area, but you can see I just posted the reversion to the mean is on its way, and will it be a place where they let go a little bit? But I don't see a reason why they should. They need a trigger for that. So something has to happen from the Fed. Something has to happen in the interest rates, in the bonds. That's all intertwined for the financials.
Nick Shaheen, no one better than looking at the fundamentals, the technicals, and putting up with me and Dennis. Nick Shaheen, Create Income with Option Spread. Thanks a lot, Nick. Great job.
Thank you very much. Talk to you next week.
All right. 8:53. Dennis, did you get a lot of notes down during that? That is excellent.
All those charts. My whole browser's littered with Nick's charts. I keep them all up, and then I email them. Nick's on it. He makes great calls there, and he keeps it simple. Like, I love his trading analysis there. So I always have Nick on.
All right. Here we are. 6 minutes before the open, Dennis.
I have a stock I want to discuss.
Sure.
Yeah.
Lionsgate, LGF. And I only bring it up.
Why?
I only bring it up.
Something.
Well, no. One of their movies, / your favorite movie of all time, just tied the record for most Oscar nominations.
Not that musical.
Yeah. Yeah, the musical.
Come on. No. What was the name of that again? I don't even remember the name of it now. The musical. I just want.
La La Land.
La La Land.
14 nominations, Dennis.
Oh, yeah, I'm sitting there, and I told the story last week, and I didn't know what La La Land was, and I actually had a night there. We had a babysitter, you got the 2-year-old at home. We're like, oh, we'll go with me and my wife see a movie, and I was like, oh, this La La Land's gonna be really good. And I'm sitting there in the movie theater, and I'm just watching, and then she says it's gonna be up for all these Oscars and all these awards, it's gonna be really good. And the first scene, they're in this traffic jam, and then one person steps out of the traffic jam, starts singing. And then another person starts singing. And then they all start singing. And I just turned to her and I look at her. I'm like, is this a musical? She laughs. And I'm like, oh, no. I don't like musicals. So anyway, I watched it. It was okay.
Hey, Dennis, do you want a little spoiler for the next Star Wars coming out? A little prediction from me after not seeing
They gave the name of it last night. The name is the Last Jedi.
Okay. Is that going to be 8 or 9?
8.
8?
8.
Okay,
8.
I think they're setting
but
up.
But actually, the 9th movie, because they had the little tweener there.
Yeah,
so it'd be,
I think. Actually, is there a lady Star Wars character that's kind of been out?
There's lots of them. Yes.
No, a big one. No.
Yeah. Yes.
There's going to be a female Jedi. I think in nine, title nine.
We know that already. You didn't watch the last one.
Okay, moving on. All right, moving on.
As Luke Skywalker is right. Apparent Don.
moving on. That.
you wanted the LGF. We digress so quickly here, Spencer. Give us your technical thoughts because this thing's been moving off of La La Land.
Really? Okay, that's a joke, right? No, LGF. It's
true. Stuck straight up.
How come it? Oh, the chart here. Did they change the symbol here?
It's LGF A maybe. Hold on, let me see.
Yeah.
Because there's class A and there's class B. So.
Oh yeah.
It may be LGF / A or / B.
I'll just
LGF dot A, LGF dot B.
28.75. That's a high of the move. It kissed it. Back 4 days ago and 5 days ago, so that's your resistance. Not sure, we'll see if it's doing anything in the pre-market now. So top is in until we can get back above 29.
All right. Let's look here just before, because we only got 3 minutes. I want to get the imbalances in. Alibaba, 200,000 to buy. It's the biggest buy imbalance I've seen in Alibaba in a long time. Not surprising. Stocks trading like crazy here in the pre-market. It's already traded 2.7 million shares, trading up 4 points on, or almost 4 points on their earnings report there. We know Yahoo's probably going to follow suit. Obviously, Yahoo, the Alibaba tracking stock trading up as well. It's up over a buck. Bristol Myers, 87,000 to buy. So it's continued buyers, finding people, you know, under this 49 area that continue to buy the stock here. AIG, 40,000 to buy. That one stands out. I haven't seen a buy imbalance in AIG in a while. Ford, 160,000 to sell. What's going to take Ford? And we know Trump tweeted this morning that he's meeting with the automotive execs tomorrow morning here. So I'm assuming that's Ford and GM. So we'll have to see what comes of that meeting with Trump. But yeah, that tweet said he wants the cars made here.
That was this morning, I thought.
But what's that?
I thought that was this morning they were meeting.
Yeah, this morning.
Okay.
No, I think he said tomorrow morning though. He tweeted it this morning and then he said tomorrow morning, didn't he?
I'm
going to look at his tweets right now. His tweet says, I will be meeting. Okay, so this is from Donald Trump at 7 o'clock this morning. We'll be meeting. No, at 6 o'clock this morning. He's up early. We'll be meeting at 9 o'clock with top. Oh, so it is today. We'll be meeting at 9 o'clock with top automotive executives concerning jobs in America. I want plants to be built here for cars sold here. So he's meeting this morning here with Ford GM. So we'll maybe find out what happens with that a little bit later on today.
You know what? Why does it make any difference where the plant's going to be when, you know, in 5-10 years, is this going to be robots building cars? It's not going to need people.
Well, that's every industry, though. We've had, you know, automation, and you know, we're at 1 minute to go in the show, so I don't know if you want to bring up this subject here right now. But, I mean, automation is the biggest, you know, that's the biggest hindrance on jobs in the future for everyone. I mean, you know, an automated robot can do a lot of things. You know, once they, you know, automate the process of it, it kills jobs. I mean, in trading, you know, that's happened, you know, big time. You know, you look at, you know, all your major brokers had, you know, lots of traders employed before, and now they got automation that's running it all, or you have algorithms. But, you know, same thing, you know, making cars, you have already a lot of automation there. And, you know, obviously the unions help, you know, to maybe keep that away, but, you know, it's scary. Automation is scary for jobs going forward.
Yeah, Benzinga is actually working on automation to replace you and I. They're going to have, like, robots.
We'll have the robot just giving the show here. The robot will go to see La La Land with its other robot wife. And the other robot will say, is this a musical?
What did Gene say about automation during that interview?
Gene said many, many things about automation.
Okay.
Many, many things. Automation. I think the number was 70%. Yes, that's 70% of today's jobs will not be around in like 20 years.
Scary.
That's what he said.
So what does that mean? I mean, going.
It means we're gonna have more time to watch movies like La La Land. No, that's seriously it. I'm not even kidding. He says there's gonna be more time for leisure because there's gonna be less people working.
Let's save this conversation for Gene, but I'm very interested in this conversation. I know Bob Bright, you know, a lot of people listening probably from Bright Trading there, you know, has said this for years, that automation is, you know, a huge risk here, you know, for jobs going forward. And he said this, you know, 10 years ago. And obviously, you know, automation is killing jobs.
Yep, definitely. All right, that's it for us today, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Just want to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Chaikin Analytics. This is their platform up on the screen right now with their groundbreaking stock research tools, including the proven Chaikin Power Gauge rating and stock discovery engine, which is up on the screen. Chaikin Analytics simplifies complex investment decisions, and it's all Present an easy-to-understand platform. To learn more, visit shakenanalytics.com/premarket. That's C-H-A-I-K-I-N analytics.com/premarket. Please remember that all the informational material and content from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. That's it for us today. Looking ahead to tomorrow's show, got a pair of guests for you, Chris Temple and Keith Curran. So hope you looking forward to those guys. Hope you enjoyed today's show and our chat with Nick. Have a good rest of your day. We'll be back with you folks tomorrow.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.